Oh boy, it's time for the annual Christmas podcast special.
My favorite podcast of the year. I wonder what John has planned.
I know. Remember the year that we had a bunch of bands play Christmas songs?
Or the year Joel Tannenbaum came with wreaths?
Or how can anyone top last year where we had CJ Ramone of the Ramones narrate our version of A Christmas Carol?
Not to mention Bad Cop, Crazy in the Brain, Tsunami Bomb, and more.
Wow, what a show. How can we possibly top that?
This year is sure to be dazzling, spectacular, amazing, breathtaking. Who knows what crazy complex thing is planned? Do you think Santa will show up this year?
Maybe, Ricky. Just maybe. Who could that be?
Ho, ho, ho! Ho, 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 ho!
Santa! Santa! Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas to you!
Merry Christmas? Merry Christmas? You killed net neutrality this year. You crushed the middle class through oppressive tax reform. You elected Donald Trump. You've all been very naughty this year. Very naughty indeed. Christmas is canceled. Do better next year. Hey, welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Punk News Podcast 382. I had a big thing planned this year, boys, but Santa said we can't do it, so I guess we can't do it this year. What a shame.
I mean, I don't know how I'm going to get through the holiday season without my family looking at me curiously for the noises that you make me emit from the basement. So
it's an annual tradition. We all sit upstairs worrying about Daddy while he's downstairs yelling in the basement.
And he's like, why does Daddy sound like Burl Ives all of a sudden? And just, yeah, all these things that you inflict upon me. None of that's happening. So we're just going to do an episode of the Punk News Podcast in which we, do our thing.
Adam, did you ever listen
to... Merry Christmas, you bastards.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
thanks for the good tidings, Adam. I appreciate that. Did you ever listen to the podcast from the Christmas special from last year? Because I know you hadn't for a while.
I definitely downloaded it, and it sat on my desktop for several months. And I'm sure that at some point during that time, I listened to it in part.
See, that hurts my feelings, Adam. I put a lot of work into that, and I made you the star. And if you ask me, it came out, like, really, really well.
Yeah, I believe you. Yeah. And the portions that I've listened to were great. I just don't know if I sat down and listened to it as a contiguous unit at any given point.
I listened to it. I enjoyed it. My performance, I think, was a bit on the cringy side because I wasn't good at it for whatever reason. But no, it was fun. The fact that we actually got CJ Ramone on there, it's kind of unbelievable.
That is so insane that we had CJ Ramone on our dopey podcast Christmas special. We had somebody that recorded with the Ramones, an actual Ramone, on our dopey. Listen, that's punk news in a nutshell, if you ask me.
Yeah, we kind of like stumble into people that actually do interesting things in the arts world, and we. Like I don't know, like we fail up, John.
That's what we do. if there's one thing you can say about punk news, at least in the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or so, what we bite off, I don't know if bite off is the right word, but we say we're going to do something and we have absolutely no idea how to do it, and somehow it works out in the end. I guess we're gifted. We're lucky.
We make use of the zero resources that we have, and we don't set expectations that high. So really, the fact that everything hasn't imploded is testament to our masterful skill at not falling in the gaping pit that is all around us.
We'll get more into our prospects for next year, our thoughts for next year, our thoughts of this year. with regards to the website next week. It'll be a big episode next week. So this week we're just going to chill out. Might be honestly kind of a slow news week, and I'm not minding it. Tricky Ricky, are you happy for once that we actually have a legit slow news week this week?
Yeah, you know what? It's finally, even like the last couple weeks, it started to calm down, and it's good. I could use the break.
Yeah, and it'll probably be slow. So by the time you hear this, it'll probably be top 10s will probably be posted or top 20s. But in the meantime, let's just get into some mail. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. This is from Liverpool Neil, who writes us all the time. And we like getting Liverpool Neil's mail. Hi, guys. Liverpool Neil here. Just a quick one while I craft my full response to the 1977 episode, which I will send later. But I couldn't let this one pass. John, you were sniffing glue when you recorded the beginning of the 1977 episode. The episode started with a letter asking if bands were overrated. On the subject of Elvis Presley, you said, and I quote, "Elvis is underrated, especially in his modern era. Post-1985, whatever, 1980. John, Elvis died in 1977. So if he was recording in 1985, that would truly make him remarkable." Well, Liverpool Neil, what I was saying is that in the 80s and the 90s and now, Elvis doesn't have quite the fandom that he had in the 60s, 70s, and 50s. The point, I know that Elvis died in 1977. The point I was making is that I think Elvis doesn't quite inspire the awe or hushed tones when talking about him that he used to in the 60s and 70s. That's the point I was making, Liverpool Neil. And then Neil follows up with, and then you follow up with this doozy on the subject of the Beatles. Who did the Beatles really influence? The Flaming Lips and Belle and Sebastian? John, what on earth are you talking about? Even non-Beatles fans like me can't deny their massive influence on every band and on pop culture in general. They've influenced bands of every genre. The Ramones, David Bowie, AC/DC, Oasis, U2, the Bee Gees, the Beach Boys, the Velvet Underground, Kiss, Bruce Springsteen, and more. All have talked about how influential the Beatles were in their formative years. And that's just musically. Almost overnight, they changed music culture. 50s rock and roll was suddenly now considered old-fashioned and condemned to the oldies stations. Emulation of their clothing, and especially their hairstyles, which became a marker of rebellion, had a global impact on fashion. They helped to redefine the album as something more than just a few hits padded out with filler, and they were primary innovators of modern music videos. Like I say, it may be the most influential band of all time in every way. I do have to say Liverpool's Neil's right about that. In the podcast, I actually immediately retracted saying that, but I will admit I got a little too full of myself in attacking the Beatles, and the Beatles are extremely influential, and probably if you could... Well, I don't know if you can you quantify influence? Like, are the Beatles the most influential band ever? They might be, but they were influenced by Chuck Berry. So does that mean Chuck Berry's more influential than the Beatles? I don't know how you can quantify that.
Oh, yeah, you can quantify influence. Do you have a clout score, John? Do you remember that? Because I had a really good clout score for a while. It looked at all my Twitter followers and how many LinkedIn dinguses I knew. And all my blog posts and counted them and averaged it or something. And I had a score. So if the Beatles don't have a clout score over like 65 or whatever I was, then fuck them, man.
They Steve Jobs says the Beatles were not influential. And there you go. Maybe the reason Steve Jobs hates the Beatles so much is because he also has a company called Apple. Feeling a little jealous. Is that right, Steve? On a side note, behind the punk news, behind the scenes at Punk News, Adam White was talking about technology or something, and I posted, "Steve Jobs is evil." And one of the younger staff members who we shout out mentioned corrected me that says Steve Jobs was evil and that Steve Jobs is deceased. Yes, I know that Steve Jobs is deceased, people.
You don't know that Elvis was deceased. You don't know that Steve Jobs is deceased. What the fuck, John? Do we need to make you like a little compendium at the end of the year that identifies which major world celebrities and cultural forces are actually dead?
Listen, I just don't read TMZ. The only thing I read here are old reviews of Hawkwind from 1973 newspapers. Anyway, Liverpool Neil continues, "But I do agree with your opinion on Nirvana. Horribly overrated band. I tell you what, if they had come up in the late 70s or mid 80s, they wouldn't have ever gotten a look in. They just happened to appear on a time when the music scene was horribly devoid of anything noteworthy. Anyway, more to follow. Keep up the good work, my friends. Liverpool Neil." Liverpool Neil does bring up an interesting statement. If Nirvana existed in 1983, say, would they have been as huge as they were, having formed in, I guess, 1988, maybe 1987? And you know,
no.
Popular 91.
No, I mean, because I mean, I first of all, Liverpool Neil, thank you for not yelling at me this time. It's greatly appreciated. The other, but when it comes to the your point about Nirvana, in many ways, they were the rebellion in quotes against hair metal. So in 1983, when that started coming out, they wouldn't have been. I agree, they would not have been looked at because that just wasn't the style back then. I happen to think what we're getting at here is like Nirvana just had just their timing was very good. And because people were getting sick of the hair metal thing, and then that's when grunge and, you know, punk inspired grunge, you know, started and became huge. So yeah, I agree.
I've taken it upon myself not to speculate if a band would be bigger or smaller if they appeared at some random time, because there'd be dragons down that path, because you can get into some really weird scenarios and you could never be right or wrong. And John, unlike you with your status of the dead, I have to be right. So I'm not doing it.
What if Hanson was around in the Middle Ages? How about that?
I know. What if Hanson was around in the Middle Ages? What's our next mail?
This is from Jeff. Hi, my name is Jeff, and a couple of weeks ago, one of you fine gentlemen had disclosed your affinity for drinking beer in the shower. I don't understand why people shy away from such a relaxing activity. On a hot day, nothing eats a cold beer in a cold shower. On the flip side, on a cold winter night, what better way to warm yourself than with a steamy shower and an ice cold beer? Either way, it's delicious. Here's a little homework assignment for you all. I want you all to try it in this upcoming week and report back with your experiences. We're all adults here, so let's keep it clean by sticking to the beer drinking experiences and nothing else. You perverts. From Jeff.
I don't drink beer, so I'm out.
Ricky, don't you drink mixed drinks or something?
I drink, I'll drink, if I'm drinking, I will have usually scotch whiskey or something hard alcohol. If it's like if I'm at like a bar and people are getting beers, I'll probably just go for a cider instead.
What's like the fanciest drink with whiskey in it?
Oh, I don't do mixed drinks. I just have it with ice.
Well, there you go, Ricky. Put a little bit of ice in that whiskey. Hop on into the shower and take a few sips.
Okay. Okay, I will. I have some scotch actually right now. Okay.
All right, take off your pants.
Yeah.
As always, go ahead, Adam.
I'm good for this. I'm okay with any of these. you know, actually, if people want to write in and tell us where to abuse specific substances for fun and profit, I'm down.
Let's do this. Actually, Adam, you'll have a drink in the shower. Ricky, you'll have scotch. I'll have a root beer in the shower, and we'll each report back with our experiences.
Okay. I'm down.
Yeah, but we each die because we've electrocuted ourselves by dragging all this rig, these mics and things into the liquid. That's not what we want to do.
Well, I don't think we're going to record ourselves doing it.
No, we have to record ourselves doing it. I mean, who cares?
Well, as always, you can reach that podcast at punknews.org. Because of the slow music week, sometimes we do record collecting talk when it is a slow music week. So let's talk about some records that we have garnered recently. Ricky, you want to kick us off?
Sure. I'm going to mention four just because it's just one's really cool that I got signed, but I've had it forever. So I was down in Fullerton over the weekend and went to Radiation Records. And what I love about Radiation Records is it's basically only punk rock and maybe some metal, maybe some alternative stuff. But most it's like 90% punk rock. And they have a fantastic old rarities section that I love digging through. It's where I got that Dead Kennedys Fresh Fruit Frauding Vegetables first pressing. So I dug through there and I found an original pressing of Black Flag six pack, the 7-inch, which I'm very happy with. I've been eyeing it since I had gone the first time. It never moved off the shelf. So finally got that. And then in the mail order wise, I got the Dwarves Julio 7-inch on green, white, and red color vinyl, and I got one of the special ones that were signed by Blag, so that was cool. And then let's see what else here. Big shout out to Steve Morey from Direct Hit. He saw that I was missing one of the variants of their Direct Hit split with the Price to Flukes or whatever the hell that they're called. That came out on Red Scare a couple of years ago, and it's a great 7-inch. I only had the blue and the red one. I mean, the blue and the green one. Steve Morey sent me their basses. He sent me a test pressing of the red one. So that was really cool. He did not need to do that, and I thanked him profusely, and I thank him again now. On Thursday, I saw the Flatliners with Decent Criminal, Sick Waiting, and Spanish Love Songs in Long Beach, and they were great. They were really good. But one of my favorite releases of theirs is the Resuscitation of the Year, Fang and Fang's 7-inch that I got on white vinyl from the Fat Wreck pre-order site. And I got that signed by the whole band, which I am incredibly it's one of my favorite pieces now, I think, now that I got signed. It's really cool. Fangs is a fantastic song of theirs. That's what I got from the old Instagram for you guys this week.
From the old Instagram. I can't recall if I've talked about this one on the show recently, but in any case, I'm kind of glad to have it. And I think it's a format, John, that we've talked about that we're pretty stoked with. So I was...
Pono?
Or Pono, yeah. I mean, it's a triangle, right? So it's really the perfect shape. You could stack them. Actually, it'd probably be pretty hard to stack those things. Anyways, I was at a show in Toronto not too long ago, and a band called The New Calling came and played. And this was a band that I had been told was like an Ottawa supergroup, but I wasn't entirely sure who it was, because this was clearly a show that was booked by people that knew who the band was, but they had no online presence yet. Like there was an empty Bandcamp site for them that was sitting there as a placeholder, and outside of that, like, zero information online. So I really wanted to get out and see who this was, and it turns out that it was the new band let's just pull up the full list here, because it is a big list of people that were in there. All right, so it's really the new vehicle for a guy named Ian Menhire, who has a band called The White Wires that was out of Ottawa, that was on The White Wires may have been on Dirt Nap at one point. They're a garage punk band, like very much in the Marked Men kind of vein. And he had a band after that called Voicemail that was similar. But anyways, there's a whole bunch of people that are in a whole bunch of bands that I'm kind of checking out and into right now that were in here. So there are members of like Bonnie Doon and Warp Lines and the Million Dollar Marxists and Mother's Children and the Sedatives and a whole bunch of people that were in this. So anyways, they came out and they played this set, and it was really cool. And then at the end, they're like, oh yeah, I guess this is our record release show, because we have records like as an afterthought. So I kind of went from not knowing who the band was at all to, oh, it's our record release show, I guess. So they went and they the very first thing this band has put out is a self-titled 4-song 12-inch maxi EP that I'm just stoked about the format. So like full full size record, John, but 4 songs. You know, could have been a 7-inch, but it just isn't.
What's your opinion of that, Adam? What's your opinion of the 12-inch that could have been a 7-inch?
I am stoked on the 12-inch. I mean, I love 7-inches, don't get me wrong, but this just feels substantive. And I enjoy just how they went completely no bullshit with this release, where it's, you know, it's black vinyl. It is in a black artless sleeve that has, you know, the center cut out so you can see the label on the record itself. And that's it. And it's just like we're a new band. We've printed a limited number of these suckers. Here they are. And it's like a big, cool 12-inch vinyl. I mean, I love, we talked a lot about like 10-inch singles on this show before, and just, you know, how especially in the 80s, like, you used to be able to go get, you know, one or two songs, or like a song and then an extended jam on like a full 12-inch record. And that was a bit more normal. You don't see it too much these days, but I like getting them. So it just aesthetically very much pleases me. The band is really cool too, but just I like that format. So that's what I want to talk about.
That's cool.
What about you, Mr. John?
I actually got three pretty cool things recently. One of the things that I got recently, Harley Flanagan is the bass player and sometimes vocalist of the Cro-Mags. He's not in the Cro-Mags right now, but he's got his own solo thing going right now, which is excellent. His last solo album was called Cro-Mags, and it was one of my favorite records of last year, and honestly, the best Cro-Mags-related record since their debut, Age of Quarrel. To that end, I've actually always avoided Harley's solo stuff because I heard it was bad, or for some reason I thought it was bad. I was wrong. Harley's solo stuff is actually like really, really good and better than most of the Cro-Mags stuff. He's got this one album called Harley's War... Harley's War Hardcore All-Stars is the name of the band, and the album is Cro-Mag. Not the recent Cro-Mags album, but rather the Cro-Mag album from, it was originally, I think, from 2003. However, I recently tracked down the very hard-to-find 2009 reissue. The reason that's important is because, in addition to the album, which is 12 tracks, it's got four tracks, which is called the 1982 solo demo, which is reportedly Harley doing Cro-Mag songs before Cro-Mags existed. Some parties, not necessarily myself, have said that those 1982 solo demos were actually recorded in like 2000, and he made them sound like they're from 1982 to prove that he wrote the songs. I couldn't say anything about that. I don't know. However, after that is an entire show at CBGB's, and it's the final Harley Flanagan show at CBGB's, and one of the very final, if not the final show at CBGB's, and it's definitely the final matinee show at CBGB's. And it's Harley doing all Cro-Mag stuff. There might be like one non-Cro-Mag song in there, I think, but it is remarkable, because really there's one official Cro-Mags live album, and it was recorded, I believe, in 1993 and 2000 as well, because it's a double disc set. Sound quality's not that great. The band was really fighting with each other at that point, so the chemistry's not there. However, this Harley Flanagan solo CBGB show, that's a bonus track on the 2009 issue of Cro-Mag, Harley's War, Cro-Mag, Hardcore All-Stars. I've listened to it, I don't know, a lot, and it's just so much energy. It's so crazy. I'll never understand why punks don't like live albums. I love live albums, and this is a great live album. Another thing that I got, and the next two things we want to talk about, sound quality. David Bowie, if you're going to collect David Bowie, you need to be aware, you don't need to be aware, but it's helpful to be aware of the different versions. There's the original RCA versions, then there's the Ryko Disc versions. The Ryko Disc versions are unique in that they're the only versions with bonus tracks. Then there's the EMI versions, which you could say are the modern remasters. And then there's the brand new ones, which I don't know if are they, let's take a look if they're RCI or somebody else. I do not recommend the brand new one, at least for Aladdin Sane. I bought the brand new one for Aladdin Sane, and the master was not good. The weird thing they did on that is it's very, very loud, and bizarrely, Bowie's voice is like lowered in it. It's actually kind of difficult to hear him through all the loudness. And I've always said that I'm, you know, not an audiophile kind of guy, but maybe I am becoming an audiophile kind of guy. The other three versions, there's the EMI version, which is like the 2000s, the Ryko discs, which is like 94, 95, 1990, and then there's the RCAs, which are the original. I was always a fan of the Ryko discs because they're not as loud as the EMI ones, which are the modern ones. They sound great. I mean, and they're like $5 used. If you see them, pick them up. They sound really, really good. They're loud, a lot of clarity. They're real good. My preference was always the Ryko discs because they had the bonus tracks, and also the sound was a little bit warmer. Maybe not as crisp as the EMIs, but a more very slightly fuller sound. I mean, we're talking, you know, almost minimal differences. Mega fans always said the RCA versions were the absolute best. That this is on CD, I'm saying. But for the longest time, the RCA CDs were like $100, $150. I'm not going to blow $150 on a David Bowie CD when I can get one that's nearly as good or as good for $5. However, because of the latest reissues, which let me tell you who they're on. Oh, the latest ones are back on RCA. No, Parlophone. I'm sorry, Parlophone. The latest ones are on Parlophone, which I don't recommend. But for some reason, now that there's been a whole bunch of brand new reissues, the original RCA reissues have dropped significantly in price. And as a matter of fact, I picked up Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders of Mars for $10 on the RCA CD this past weekend. And this CD came out in like 1984, 1985. Adam White, CDs that were mastered and released in 1984, 1985, what do they sound like?
Mm.
Oh, those are the rough ones.
Yeah, garbage. They sound like garbage.
Those are the rough ones. Yeah, yeah. You usually know that something's up when there's a weird little disclaimer on the CD itself that's like, this is a CD. And there's,
right.
Like, I have a few of those floating around where like it seems like it's trying to explain to you what it is. It's iffy.
Yeah, and also it says, due to technology constraints, we tried to get the best sound quality we could. You know what I mean? So there might be some sound variation. So anyways, I picked up the 1984 version of the RCA David Bowie CD. Fellas, I was blown away about how good it sounds. Like, it sounds amazing. Like, wow. It's much quieter than the other ones, but as all good masterings are, if you turn it up really loud in your car or on your stereo, it still sounds amazing, and it sounds great. Like it's meant to be played loud on a good stereo, you see. And I guess maybe most CDs were mastered to sound on crappy stereos in the 80s. It's the best 80s sounding CD I've ever heard ever, and it blows my mind that if this CD sounds this good, why don't all CDs from the 80s sound this good? They sound so bad. One answer is, even though it's the USA issue, it was mastered and produced in Japan. And of course, the Japanese are famous for very high quality record and CD presses. That being said, is it amazingly better than the Ricohs and the EMIs? No. However, it does sound the most like a vinyl. It sounds a lot like a vinyl. It sounds probably identical to the vinyl record. It's very, very, very warm sounding. It doesn't have any of that tinniness that like super new CDs have that like kind of hurt your ears. And I gotta say, like, I finally realized what the RCA guys have been talking about all this time. It sounds amazing. Amazing. Adam, am I becoming an audiophile?
Yeah, so I guess if you see, I'm worried if you become an audiophile or anyone becomes an audiophile, it immediately means that you go down this road where you're a guy in a turtleneck that listens to prog, and
or you're a dad that buys like Sgt. Pepper for like the 97th time, you know, oh, this one's slightly better, you know.
I mean, I could maybe get down with that, but like I just don't want to listen to prog, John. Like, I'm okay with stuff sounding good, but oof.
Well, for my third,
I don't know if I can go there.
For my third pick, I got to continue my audiophile journey. So the newest Morrissey album is called Low in High School. I love the last Morrissey album. It's my second favorite solo Morrissey album. That one was called World Peace is None of Your Business. I thought that record was amazing, and the critics savaged it. They hated it, and I don't know why. My only guess is... Oh, go ahead, Ricky.
Can I, sorry to interrupt, but I actually... He posted a video about that exact issue today.
Morrissey or David Bowie?
Morrissey.
Adam, can you catch that?
Yes. That Bowie is not dead and is posting videos with Elvis and whoever the fuck else you think is alive. Steve Jobs.
So Morrissey posted a video about how people got World Peace is None of Your Business wrong?
He posted, it was a video where I think he got in trouble for something he said in a German interview.
Oh yeah,
a while
that
back.
That was a whole other thing.
And what he did was he argued that because of whatever happened in that interview, I didn't read it, but that's why it got panned, and he doesn't think any of the reviewers actually listened to it, and that's why it didn't get a lot of airtime, and it didn't make like get higher on the Billboard charts and stuff like that. It's like an 8-minute video.
You mean the newer record or the older record?
No, he said, I'm this record.
The newest one.
Yeah.
Because the newest one is Low in High School. The last one was World Peace is None of Your Business, which got terrible reviews. And I don't understand. The only guess I can make is that that one has like no love songs, and it's all political songs and angry songs, which I love. The newest one. Oh, yeah. God, Ricky.
Yeah, well, just take a look at that video, because I didn't know what to make of it. Because you're the bigger fan, so.
I'll check it out. The newer one is called Low in High School, which got much, much better reviews. And the only reason that I can figure – I actually like the last one better, but this one I think got better reviews is because all the song titles are love song titles, but all the actual songs are extremely political. On the record, he does some pretty savage – well, he talks about how much he hates the Queen. He talks about how much he hates cops. In a particularly savage moment, he makes fun of – enlisted soldiers that get killed in the line of duty, which that's cold Morrissey. And he does some other pretty political stuff, very crass like. However, I didn't love that. I got the album on CD. It was very, very loud, and it was mastered. You guys know, like, I don't know if you guys, everyone's ears are different. When records are mastered very, very loud, it almost like rattles in your ears. You know what I'm talking about?
I do notice sometimes those kinds of records can be a bit overwhelming when I have it at a moderate volume. But I don't know what you mean by rattling.
It's almost like not enjoyable to listen to it. It like pierces your ears. Anyways,
yeah, okay.
As part of the promotional release for this new album, Low in High School, Morrissey sold about 200 test presses in independent record shops signed by Morrissey. Online, I saw that somebody – did I talk about this story already?
I don't remember it.
Online, I saw that someone was selling one for $40. I'm like, damn, I'm buying this because I hadn't bought the record yet. The record's like 30, so I'm like, screw, I'm buying a test press for 40. But it was shipping from England, so by shipping and everything, it's actually about $50, which is, you know, expensive for a record. But I'm like, yeah, I'll get a Morrissey test press, and that's cool. And if I don't want it, I can always resell it. So I get it. And interestingly, after I paid for it, I'm not going to name names, but the seller was a pretty well-known English record shop, which I thought, that's kind of poor form. It was supposed to be a promotional thing, and they pocketed some, inflated the price, and sold them directly. Although it benefited me, a little poor form. It's a record store that has a little bit of history with Morrissey and a little bit of history of selling unauthorized items, namely bootleg Beastie Boys records. Anyways, so I got it. And so I got the CD and the test press version. I put the test press version on my record player. My word, it was a world of difference. Like, maybe because record players have a more limited range of sound, like, it wasn't as, quote, loud as the CD, but it had so much, it seemed as though it had so much fuller, broader, bolder sound. And my enjoyment of the record placed it way, way, way higher than it was on the CD version, almost as high as World Peace is None of Your Business. The sound is amazing. So that just goes to show sometimes format does matter. I usually don't get too hung up on format, but maybe now I am getting hung up on format, and maybe I now am an audiophile. I couldn't say. I usually like CDs better, but man, the Morrissey record sounds way better than the CD.
John, I'm just happy you're happy.
Thank you.
Me too.
Thank you. I'll toast it.
So anyways, what are we doing? We're gonna play a song before we get going here.
Let's play a song and talk a little bit of news and wrap it up early, like our Christmas presents.
Do you guys have a? It looks to me on the schedule that I'm the only one that has written down a song. Do you guys have a song prepared for now, or do you want me to go?
I just don't want to tell you my secrets.
But, okay, that's fair too.
Here, I'll do something, and then you can keep your powder dry. So there's a label in Toronto called Pleasance, and they released an album earlier this year from a band called Whim, like WHIMM, called A Stare Ajar, and it's a record I've been grappling with for a little while, because it's one of these things that I listen to, and on the one hand, like, I acknowledge that it's good, it's really good. But it's also, like, it's discordant, like, purposely so. It's a difficult listen. It's not hooky. But what they're doing is good, right? So it's a strange thing, because I can't, like, I'm doing my year-end list shit right now, and I'm like I think this is a good record, and I think this is a good band, and I think they're saying important things. I'm not going to go say, oh, this is one of my top 20 records of the year, because I'm not having a huge amount of fun with this as opposed to other things. But, you know, I really want to spend more time trying to dig into it and figure out what's going on. So anyways, this is a band called Whim. I'm going to play a song from A Stare Ajar. This is probably very similar to, I get the same sort of feel from a lot of Discord stuff from over the years, especially from sort of like the lower down the roster than Fugazi, DC area bands, that whole sound that they had created. So anyways, so this is Whim. What am I going to play? Whim. I'm going to play a song called Second Sound off the Whim album, A Stare Ajar, which is on Pleasance Records. So check this out. I'm curious what people think. Here you go. We'll be right back.
stop me to care for the surroundings.
We're back. That was Wim with Second Sound. So, John, we have a bunch of stories to talk about.
Yeah.
None of them are of any import. This is a area, this is a time of the year, and it exists between, I think, now and
January 7th, I'd say.
That's pretty good. There's about a month around Christmas and New Year's in which the music industry does nothing, like nothing. Nothing happens. You're not announcing anything. You're not putting out records. Well, I mean, you're not putting out records unless you're crazy. I mean, my favorite band is putting out a record on Christmas Day because fuck it, I don't know.
Only jackasses would put out cassette tape this time of year.
Only jackasses would put out cassette tape. But like in general, like anyone that's following sort of like the rhythms of how the industry works, which is, you know, a lot of the bands and labels that we talk about aren't doing shit. So we are going to be kind of thin on the amazing new stories. So, I mean, on that note, Mean Jeans wrote a song about pizza. I mean, fucking pull your car over if you're listening to this so that we can talk about this one. So Mean Jeans, the band, They've been releasing a bunch of jingles for products that they haven't been paid to make. So they had one that they wrote about Mountain Dew and one that they wrote about Coors Light. And this they've made one about pizza, a pizza brand I've never heard of, but
there's
probably a reason for that, called Totino's. Don't know what that is. But anyways,
do like Big Bite, stuff like that, I think.
Yeah, so anyways, they wrote a song called Give Me Totino's. Give me is in brackets, just in case anyone wants to get that right. And it has a video with it that's pretty great. This band, they're signed to Fat Wreck. They released an album called Tight New Dimension in 2016. And they are clearly just having fun with the internet, and that's great. So anyways, there's a Mean Gene song about pizza. Ricky, you were super into the Mean Gene song about Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm hoping they play these live. They're doing like a West Coast tour next month. Hopefully I think they're going to be here. So I'm hoping that they play these live. I'm hoping that they put these together for some sort of limited release after they decided like this whatever project this is that they're doing is over. I'm also, you know, if they keep doing this, I just have this weird feeling, a funny feeling that like one of the videos will go like mega viral and then they'll become huge. Like, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
The kind of things that'd be really fun for them to like shove in between songs people are expecting at a live show.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think this is great. I think the video was really funny. You could tell he put it together fast, which I think just added to it being funny. I think just keep doing this, guys. I think it's great, especially if they get a deal. Like if they got a deal with Mountain Dew, I want to see what you only get free pizza for when they tour on the road.
you know, this is not the only mention of frozen pizza from bands that I listen to, come to think of it. B.A. Johnston, of course, has mentions of, what frozen pizza brand shows up in his? There's a brand called, like, Dr. Oetker's. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? It's got, like, a weird name. It's like a German name, like Dr. Oetker.
The Germans are famous for their pizza.
Yeah, I guess. Anyways, though, it's a frozen pizza you can get in Canada, so I don't know if that's anywhere else, but he totally mentions that in some of his songs.
That's definitely where I want to buy my pizza from, a German doctor.
Canadian-German doctor. Or at least a German doctor that's only managed to break the Canadian frozen food aisle market. John, you have any particular insights into songs about pizza?
Mean Jeans are great. These videos are hilarious. I do like how this video, like, particularly recalls, Adam, what you might remember is, like, commercials in, like, 1991, 1992 aimed at kids between like, cartoons and stuff. You know, like, I can see them trying to sell, like, well, like, not frozen pizza, but, like, some kind of Capri Sun or something like that, or, like, a board game or something, like, you'll get caught in that crossfire. I think this video is silly, but it does underscore the talent that Mean Gene is able to create an homage to that very specific era without, I guess, directly parodying any one thing.
Yeah, you know what? I wonder now if that's the way that kids' commercials always work, or if that was very specifically a, like, video technology of the 90s thing. I mean, I don't know what the commercials on kids cartoons are today, because I'm not a fucking chud, so I'm not really sure what like you know, if you're one of these internet people and you're sitting down to watch one of your I'm not gonna make fans, you know, one of these shows that all you people on the internet are always talking about, like, are there still, like, wacky, you know, commercials for, like, Hawaiian Punch and stuff?
Or is it all like medicine? Like it's like during, like, between Columbo, you know, I need Cialis. I need Lubitrex, you know. Anyways, with this, I do wonder, though, who's playing the joke on who? And here's why. Obviously, Mean Gene is kind of, you know, being funny and being silly with these commercials. But what does it say that commercials are so ingrained into the North American psyche that we're actually co-opting the commercial and building that back into a song? Who's getting the last laugh here? Or the question is, are we as smart as we think we are? We think, to a degree, that this is a funny commentary on the state of, you know, modern commercialism, but is it actually modern commercialism at its apex form, if you will? What do you think of that, Adam? What do you think of that synopsis?
Oh, you know what? You want to talk about fucking modern commercialism at its apex form? I'm going to throw you for a loop here. Maybe this is something we can actually seriously talk about on this
low
episode
news,
where there's no real news. So there was an article that I posted that was really critical of Spotify that I told everyone to read because it was really interesting and no one did because fuck you. And the one thing that they brought up in that article that I thought was fascinating was. And I forget which band they were talking with. They were talking to someone from a band that was like a popular indie rock band thing in the 90s, right? And they were saying that back then you were always trying to, like, vehemently deny the corporate use of your songs if you were trying to maintain a certain level of credibility and authenticity, right? So, and it was always seen as like a major black mark if one of your songs would show up in an ad for something, right? Like, you know, oh, you're not cool anymore because your song was used in this car commercial or something, like, you've sold out, right? And it used to be that, like, you would really try to narrow down the amount of corporate connections that your band would possibly have, to the point where a lot of bands would strictly be, you know, doing work or doing endorsement stuff with, you know, like, music properties. Like, okay, yeah, we'll promote our label or something like that, but we're not going to promote, like, a fucking shoe company, and we're not going to promote, you know, definitely your product, and, you know, heaven forbid, like, the Army or something tries to use one of our songs. Like, it was a big deal about trying not to allow corporate interest to use your music. So that was the case. And that was the thing that bands are always trying to, you know, trying to exert some control over. Well, nowadays, what you have is Spotify basically coming in and automating automating the selling out and taking the artist out of it so they don't actually get paid. So you can go on to, so let's say you are Nike, right? You can go on to Spotify, create a playlist of all your favorite music. So you can go on to Spotify and make a playlist. It's got some Crass in it, some Propagandhi, you know, you got a little bit of Fugazi in there, right? You make this cool playlist. You call it like the Nike Get Pumped playlist. You take it and you share that playlist out on, you know, your Nike branded Facebook page and your Nike branded YouTube channel and your Nike branded whatever else, right? You are YouTube, you're not sharing Spotify and YouTube, but you know what I mean? Like on Twitter or whatever else. And suddenly you've gone and you've taken all this artist's music. You're using it to promote your shit. The artist hasn't consented to it, but the artist has sort of given up their consent to Spotify to allow people to use it for whatever they want. The advertiser is getting the benefit of basically like using your music to kind of help, you know, bang through whatever their corporate message is. And you as the band who has your music on Spotify, you have no fucking control over this at all. So it's like no one even needs to go and say, hey, can we use your music, Fugazi, to sell shoes? Fugazi has not the consent to that. It's just like, oh, hey, this music's on Spotify. We've made the official, like, you know, the new Nike Kicks playlist or something like that. And I'm reading this and I'm just like, holy fuck, they're right. Jesus Christ, that's like a horrible repercussion of this technology that we have that I had never thought about before. And I'm curious what anyone thinks of that.
Well,
go ahead, Ricky. Go ahead, John.
Well, first of all, I agree with that synopsis 100%. Second, I wonder if Fugazi is on Spotify or not. Does anyone know the answer to that? Third, it's just following the trail of continual disrespect for the artist. And I guess corporate giving deference to corporations solely to so that because they make money and get certain people rich. I agree with that 100%. And if bands, well, I don't say if bands are, it's tougher bands. Nobody's making basically because Steve Jobs basically has literally robbed bands of their money through file sharing, through iTunes, through Spotify, through Apple Music, through all of that. Steve Jobs and of his
crumbs. Can you leave Steve Jobs alone? It's like
yeah, he had nothing to do with Spotify, dude.
But here's my problem with the Steve Jobs thing. Steve Jobs, you're making up a boogeyman, and we can blame the boogeyman for it.
He's a boogeyman. He's bad.
Sure, but it's not like, oh, if it wasn't for Steve Jobs. Like, there's a whole fucking industry of people that are here, and I don't want them all to get off the hook because of Steve Jobs.
Well, fair enough. The reason I ping on Steve Jobs because I lived in the Bay Area for 7 years, and people would talk about the guy like he was a deity when he was a very smart man, very creative man to a degree, but he was a bad man, a bad man. So that's why I ping on Steve Jobs. I use him as an archetype for all the Steve Jobs out there, which there are many. So what do you want me to call him, Adam?
You can just say the fucking tech bros, because I think this is the fucking tech bros that are doing this thing. I mean,
the point being, I agree. Tech bros have figured out a very manipulative and sneaky way to rob bands of their money and then put it in the pockets of much larger corporations. And so the only way to get through it is if all bands band together and say, we're not going to do it. We're taking all our music off those services. And if they did do that, companies like Spotify would crumble immediately. The point being is that's very hard to orchestrate. And listen, there's a reason those guys are rich. It's because they're smart and they know how to maneuver people around of money that they are rightfully owed.
Here you go. I found the exact article and the exact quote that I wanted to bring up here. So I'm going to actually give credit where credit's due here. So this is from a website called TheBaffler.com. Article is written by Liz Pelly. It's called The Problem with Muzak. And here is the specific quote that I was sort of alluding to. It's in a subsection of this called The Automation of Selling Out. I'm quoting now. This is not me talking. The avant punk four piece Deer Hoofs 2016 single Plastic Thrills is featured on the Nike Running Tempo Mix, which boasts over 500,000 followers. The playlist is featured prominently on the workout subpage within Spotify's browse feature, along with a few other Nike playlists, which is considerably rare. Not many playlists found through browser currently curated by brands other than Spotify itself or by the major labels. In conversation with Deerhoof drummer Greg Sonier about his Nike playlist, about the Nike playlist. He recalls a time in 2007, and I remember this, when a group of artists filed a class action lawsuit against Camel Cigarettes and Rolling Stone for publishing an advertorial on the history of indie rock, one that had more than 100 artist names used without their permission. The band was happy to be included and inspired to see their peers push back against corporate exploitation. The difference is now that, and this is the quote from Greg, he says, "The difference is now that if you don't bow down to Spotify, you might as well tell whoever runs the guillotine above your neck to just let her rip. These streaming services are literally the only option for a music career nowadays." So, like, what I hate about that is that, like, you don't have any agency in it. Like, that's what's driving me crazy here, right? It's like, what can the band do? They can pull all their music off these services and basically nuke their exposure, or you go on the service, but the service isn't built in a way that's artist friendly. So you can't go onto the service and say, "Hey, let people stream my music if they're a subscriber, but don't allow my music to be used by, say, like a major brand in a playlist or something like that," right? Because that's not the way that these platforms have been built. So, and I think that's where, like, that's where I am very judgmental of all my fellow tech bros who build these things, is that they're not, these services aren't being built in a way that's going to actually give the artist what they want, make the artist happy. These services are built in a way to try to, you know, drive whatever metrics that they have. And that's why whenever I look at one of these things, I want to look at, and this is why I don't fundamentally trust either Google or Spotify in particular, is because you got to look at what they're trying to sell you, right? So in my personal read on this, I trust Bandcamp, right? Because Band can go on there, they can choose how their music wants to be used. They're putting their music on there. They're selling their music. Bandcamp makes their money by taking a cut of the sale of the music, and then that's all sort of clear, right? Like, I understand how they're making their money, how it's being used. I actually trust to a degree Apple in this respect, because I understand how Apple makes their money. So Apple has these music services. You can go, you can buy music. I'm sure that no one actually gets paid all that much from being on Apple Music or in the iTunes Store or whatever, right? But they have these platforms. But what's Apple's game? Apple's game is that they want to sell me, another fucking iPhone or an iPad or something like that. Like, they want me to go buy expensive pieces of physical equipment, and that's how they're making their money, and they want me in that ecosystem so that I keep doing it. And fuck, I did it a month ago. My wife's old laptop died and I got her an iMac. And why? Because all of our other shit's in the Apple universe, so it just made more sense to, you know, keep everything talking to each other. So I understand how Apple's making their money there, because they want to sell, you know, expensive pieces of plastic and silicon and whatever, and that's what they're doing. I get a lot less of an idea of what Google's game is a lot of the time, because Google's an advertising company essentially, right? But I don't know, like, from their music endeavors in particular, how that factors in. It may not even be. It may just be a loss leader, and they make their money elsewhere, right? And then Spotify, in particular, like, Spotify subscriptions are super ultra cheap, so they can't be making much money there, but I guess some, but clearly not enough to give to any of those artists. So, like, as far as, like, my trust meter goes, like, Spotify is pretty near the bottom of it, because, like, I don't get their game. Like, you can sell me shit, but, like, I want to know that you're selling me shit. I don't want to be the product.
Hey, you know what? I've been consistent about this on the podcast since this became a thing. Told you these streaming sites are evil, and I gotta tell you, this is just another point for those of us that are sitting this one out.
It's true, Ricky has been consistent.
You have been, but you've been consistent with the temperament of an old man who lives in the woods.
You know, in this case, I'm all right with that. If I'm that old man yelling at the clouds, I'm cool with that on this one.
Well, listen, I love Bandcamp, so I'll give mad props to Bandcamp. I think Bandcamp is the way rules to go.
Bandcamp absolutely is the way to go. I love Bandcamp.
But just, like, I just keep putting myself into the artist's shoes here. And, like, what the fuck do you do?
Well, you can only do one of two things. You can form what is essentially a union and say none of us are going to do it. Or you can petition Congress and modify copyright law, or do like what they did with radio and, you know, set up a – well, that's the thing. That's the other issue then, Adam. Do you regulate streaming services? And that's a double-edged sword. On one edge, if you regulate streaming services, which I know a lot of actually entertainment attorneys are trying to get done, if you regulate, that means bands hypothetically get paid, although in the modern era, I don't even know if that would happen. But on the other hand, if you regulate – things, that means you get somebody, Tipper Gore or somebody else, saying you can't do this, you can't do that. So it's not an easy solution. You know what I mean?
No, listen, I think the
easy solution is everyone needs to stop being a dick and pay artists, not even a whole lot. $10 per CD is very reasonable.
Well, no, I think that the solution is that at some point the venture capitalists decide that they're going to stop like shoveling free money at the Spotify's of the world. And then the Spotify companies have, because I can't imagine that like Spotify makes a whole ton of money just from being them. Like they must still be one of these companies that's funded up the wazoo by like some billionaire's checkbook, right?
So wait, don't they also take like a subscription fee too?
Yeah, but for the amount of content that they're picking up, like, and that subscription fee is. The subscription fee, I would imagine, and this is the case a lot of the time, that with a lot of these online services, the actual amount that they make that they're charging you is incredibly subsidized by the people that are funding it. So there was something that came out about Uber not too long ago where they said that, like, I forget what the actual number was, but like for every Uber ride you take, yeah, you're paying them like $12 or whatever to go from X to Y, but that should have cost them, you know, $17. But five of it was paid from the venture capital pile type thing. And like they're depressing the prices because they've been given like billions of dollars on spec. So, you know, if these organizations are like actually forced to like operate as a real business, then I think you'd have a different sort of situation there. Like I'm not against streaming as a fucking technical solution. Like it's a way that you can listen to music over a certain kind of box. That's fine. It's just that like can it be implemented in a way that's not fucking everyone that's making it is the issue.
Spotify still is not making money. You're right, Adam.
Exactly. So where are they getting their money, John? From you?
No, they're
I've never used Spotify once ever. Do you believe that?
I haven't either.
No, I meant like, John, are you personally angel investing in Shopify or in Spotify with their
see, that's my grant. See, I'm trash talking Spotify, and that will buy net. What is it? Negative.
Holy shit. Okay, here you go. Spotify. I just looked it up in Crunchbase, which is a website. Okay, they've been through 17 rounds of funding. The total amount of funding that they have been given. Sorry, I'm dying here. They have been given $2,713,000,000.
Yeah, but even so, like, that's a lot of money for one person. But if you were to spread that out among every artist they have on there, that wouldn't be a lot.
Adam, you think I'll get my $2 billion?
No, they're
back?
Not giving that money to the artists, Ricky. They're using it to build a fucking doomsday weapon or something.
Yeah, I know. But that's my point, is that if you're expecting artists to get paid a lot because of that, that investment, it wouldn't amount to a lot.
On March 30th, 2016, they were given $1 billion by two investors.
I gotta tell you, if they're not gonna make money, I don't see this lasting very long. Relatively long.
That's why I was bringing up like how they make their money from like a trust standpoint, because like again, like I can understand like Apple's bottom line, right? Like they sell computers, right? So
yeah.
All right, sure. That doesn't like absolve them of like artist unfriendly agreements or anything like that, but at least it puts into perspective like what's going on there, and I can understand the economics of it. But something like this where it's just, you know,
yeah,
it's I wonder if
because clearly the streaming isn't making a ton of money for, I don't know if it's making a lot of money for them. I honestly don't know if they are or not, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they tried getting their own sort of product out there in the market. I mean, not maybe a phone that's more central to music, but or maybe they'll try and do something kind of on the dumber side and try and launch their own music player.
Or maybe they're going to drill a fucking hole in everyone's head and we're all going to line up and get the hole.
Maybe they'll put out a benefit cassette with a lot of cool bands on it and make a bunch of money that way by selling cassette compilations.
Yeah, see, I don't know what their angle is. I mean, what do you do with $2 billion when your infrastructure is basically built?
Foosball.
Yeah.
Better foosball.
Air hockey.
Pay people.
I don't know. It's crazy to me. And I mean, like, I work in tech, but like, I work in such the low rent version of tech that I look at this and this is just insane. Okay.
Does it hurt your feelings when I like yell about how much I hate Steve Jobs and those guys?
Nope, because he doesn't give me any money.
Fair enough.
I mean, it doesn't hurt my feelings. It maybe muddles your argument by dwelling on your Steve Jobs hatred that I think you're more amused with than anything else.
Who's been dead for 7 years?
Well, listen, I mean, that's part of, if I'm not amusing myself, who am I amusing? I mean, that's the whole point of this, isn't it, Adam?
I tell that to my wife every day when she's like, well, why can't you just talk to me like a person? Why are you marching around the kitchen singing a song right now? And I'm like, well, I'm amused. So that's all that really matters. All right, John, all the rest of these stories, what do you want to do? Talk about one of them.
We'll talk about at least two of them. Maybe we can cut the last one. Alice Cooper is going to be – I just want to talk about this because I love my title and no one thought my title was funny. Alice Cooper to order Jesus to perform miracles. Alice Cooper is going to be playing the part of King Herod in NBC's Jesus Christ Superstar Live. He previously sang the King Herod song in a Jesus Christ Superstar soundtrack from like 10 years ago or so. Anyways, this is cool. Alice Cooper's cool. Alice Cooper's punk. I don't know why people don't think Alice Cooper's punk. Alice Cooper's the man. This is amusing. Maybe it's a little maybe Alice has played the counter expectation angle a little bit too much as Alice Cooper. But even so, this is amusing. I won't watch it, but I'll listen to the song. This is really cool. This next thing. So of course, as everyone,
can we stop for a minute and discuss how we're supposed to pronounce King Herod? Because I totally thought it was Herod.
Well, it's Aramaic, I believe, or is it Hebrew? I guess it's Hebrew.
Oh, so like so so the I is a J, and you can't step on that one tile, or you'll fall through.
Yeah, so I think it's more Herod or something like that. Herod. So. It's Hebrew.
Aramaic speakers.
What's that Aramaic?
Podcast Hebrew. PunkNews.org. Write us in. Tell us how to pronounce this shit. All right. John, I love you and I love your Alice Cooper appreciation trend or whatever, but I would never watch this.
Me either.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Well, if I knew like the 5 minutes when Alice Cooper was on, I would turn on for those 5 minutes. Anyways, Alice is the man. This is really, really cool. As everyone knows, the first Devo album, Are We Not Men? Answer, We Are Devo. Adam, who produced that famous first album?
Oh, God. Was it Eno?
It was Brian Eno. And so anyways, so everyone knew that. That was on the table. Everybody knew that. At a recent Sonos event, Mark Mothersbaugh was interviewed. And during that interview, he gave out several very interesting revelations. One of the big revelations is, of course, Adam White. During the 1976, 1977, 1975 period, who else was Eno producing with and recording with?
I said his name 2 seconds ago with Bowie.
Correct. Oh, you did say that?
Yeah.
So everyone knows that apparently that during Are We Not Men, We Are Devo sessions, Bowie was there for a little bit of the time, recorded some stuff, and even mixed some of the tracks, and even sang backup vocals, which the band bizarrely erased from the album in order to make it sound more Devo-like. I actually think that maybe it's the right decision because it's a Devo album, not a Bowie album, but I would like to hear the Bowie mix, if you will. So that was
wanted to cut Bowie out of that sweet Devo cash.
So anyway, I would love to hear that, and no one knew that Bowie actually did production and recording work on the first Devo album. The second thing is there's apparently a jam tape of Devo, Bowie, Brian Eno, and Holger Zuki of Can just kind of jamming, and it's been recorded on a tape. Mark Mothersbaugh has the tape. He hasn't listened to it yet, and you think he listened to it as soon as he found it, but he hasn't listened to it yet, but it exists. However, I think people probably shouldn't get their... First of all, it's really cool that that exists. Devo, Bowie, Eno in their prime jamming. That sounds pretty cool, you know? That being said, the tape is probably underwhelming. It's probably just them kind of screwing around. Like, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh my God, it's a long-lost Devo, Bowie, Eno album. It's probably not that. It's probably just them, like, doing riffs and stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, like, although that studio stuff can be incredibly telling, because you can, like, hear who's mad at who and, you know, what all the little in-jokes and things like that. So it would totally be worth sitting down to listen to. I'd be less worried that it's not an album. I'd be more worried that it is incomprehensible fuzz.
Yeah.
Like that you're gonna go pop in those. Well, it's probably not a fucking cassette tape, right? Like, it's like, what, like a reel or something that they've,
he just said
that
they've tape, got it so, on? Yeah, it's probably a tape reel, yeah.
So, you know, well, in my brain, I'm picturing like throwing in like a decayed old, you know, cassette tape and it doesn't work anymore. But maybe with a reel, you have a little bit more luck, but who knows?
Well, then let's cover this very last thing very quickly, and then we'll wrap up for the week. Wesley, of course, who's Wesley Willis, fellows?
Rock and Roll McDonald's.
The late Wesley Willis.
The late Wesley Willis. Wesley Willis was a recording guy. He put out over 100 albums. He suffered from a lot of issues regarding mental health, depression, and those kinds of things. However, he was also an incredibly talented, very unique poet/musician. All his songs are kind of over the same exact beat in different speeds, but he has very unique, funny, and sometimes insightful lyrics. A very unique person. He put out a couple albums on Alternative Tentacles, and one of the songs he put out was a song called Rock and Roll McDonald's, which is about the Rock and Roll McDonald's in... was it in Cleveland, I believe? Yeah, it is in Cleveland. And, of course, Jello Biafra famously covered that both with the Jelvins and with Guantanamo School of Medicine, the song Rock and Roll McDonald's. Well, the famous landmark, which Wesley Willis wrote a song about, is now closing down. It is no longer going to be called Rock and Roll McDonald's. It will now just be a regular old boring McDonald's, ending the place's long-running status as a landmark. And I thought this was a fitting way to cap off today's discussion, because we started off with Tostinos and Mean Jeans singing a loving tribute to Mean Jeans. And here we have Wesley Willis singing a song, which is a famous Wesley Willis song, as famous as he gets, kind of dissing on Rock and Roll McDonald's and saying why you shouldn't eat McDonald's.
That's a nice symmetry that you've rubbed in.
Yeah. The question being, can a commercial be art, either in the positive or the negative context?
Well, I mean, hold on. Are you saying that Rock and Roll McDonald's would be a commercial? Because I don't know if I would necessarily quantify it as that.
You mean the song Rock and Roll McDonald's?
Yeah, the song.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's co-opted what Rock and Roll McDonald's is into a song.
Is that mean the weird thing here is that and Willis was so often like dancing on that weird line between like parody and sincerity, and how much of it came from like his you know outsider art status, and how much of it came from mental illness and everything else, that it's hard to ascribe completely to him that like, oh, he was doing a bit here. But let's take Rock and Roll McDonald's and actually consider it to be like something that's made to be funny and weird.
I think you got it. I don't want to sell Wes. I think people sometimes sell Wesley Willis short. I think at least sometimes he knows he's being funny when he's being funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the only thing that ever bothered me about Wesley Willis is that some people, like, they were laughing at him.
But that's their problem. You know what I mean?
Right. And I think that, like, and there's, that's too simplistic. Cause like he was a person. He was aware of the kind of stuff that he was doing. Right. It wasn't just like, oh, look at this. Crazy guy clowning around, right? Like that wasn't what was happening. But so let's consider Rock and Roll McDonald's like a work of parody then, right? So if we're going to do that, that was the vibe that I was always expecting to get out of those Mean Jeans songs, but never quite did. And we talked about this when we talked about the Mountain Dew song, is that like it's totally straight, like Mountain Dew could use that, right? Like that's where it like dances on that line between, you know, is this an actual, is it a commercial, like paid or not, or is it something that is done for art? Now the new pizza song, while lyrically there's nothing offensive in it, it does feature you know, one of them looking pretty dirtbag dancing on top of a pizza. So,
and like, ooh, ah.
So I think that's a little bit more in the parody realm than the Mountain Dew one. So that's a bit clearer there.
Yeah, I mean, I've never really followed this, so I just know the song. I heard the Rock and Roll McDonald's song after I saw Max Sabbath perform. They like that's how they closed their show, basically.
They covered Rock and Roll McDonald's?
They didn't cover it. They just play it like the end.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Anyways, there we go. We're just going to drop off there. It's sleepy time of year, folks. There's not too much that we can.
Is this Wesley? People are saying this Wesley Willis story is non-news, and honestly, I might be inclined to agree. To tell you the
truth. That a McDonald's is closing somewhere for remodeling. That's pretty much stretching.
I saw it as one of the greatest hits of one of the world's most unique artists was closing down. You know.
You're always looking for an angle, though. Ricky, play a song here, and then we'll wrap up.
All right. So since we mentioned this artist earlier, I want to just say that this was a total coincidence, but I wanted to play a song off his record anyway. This is a record that deserves a lot more attention than it's gotten in the last half of this year. But CJ Ramone put out a really great record called American Beauty in March. Through Fat Records, and I wanted to play something off that. So what he did for the last song on that album was he covered Pony by Tom Waits, and he also got the horn section from Mariachi All Bronx, I believe, to play on it, and it's a really cool cover. So I'm going to play that. Again, this is Pony, a Tom Waits cover by the one and only CJ Ramone. Here it is.
I hope my pony knows the way back home. Slow without a chance.
don't know what that had to do with fast food. I thought all we did was talk about fast food on this show.
No. I got nothing on fast food for this one. Or ever. I don't think. I don't know.
Oh, I have so many songs about fast food that I can play you. Anyway, so podcast@punknews.org if anyone wants to send us an email. And I don't know. People are going to hear this after Christmas, so we don't have to
be good in 2018. Don't give make stupid decisions. Don't be stupid in 2018.
No. You know what? Screw that. It's like we're already way down this fucking hole. Just go crazy. Just fuck shit up. Not knock things over. Don't wash anymore. You know, leave the cereal box open. Who cares?
Drink milk straight from the bottle.
Drink milk straight from the cow. Okay.
Adam, I almost said a Star Wars spoiler because I forgot you hadn't seen it.
Fuck off!
This has been a Valor Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@valorundergroundstudios.com.